Welcome to episode 275 of the Women of the Military podcast. This week, my guest is Jamie Peer. In today's episode, Jamie is going to share her story of military service. She joined the military unexpectedly and ended up serving in the Army for 23 years. And she was a personnelist. And now she is the senior executive officer for the Moral Injury Support Network for service women. And in this interview, we talk about some of the challenges that she had to overcome, highlights of her time in the military, and why she is working with the Moral Injury Support Network for service women and why that work is so important. We also are going to highlight moral injury. April, today is the last day of April, but is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so I wanted to do this episode to cover both those months. And I wanted to cover moral injury because it's connected to both mental health and to military sexual trauma. So it's an important topic to talk about. And I really am thankful for not only for having Jamie come on the podcast, but for the work that she and her team are doing. So before we get started with this week's interview, I want to remind you that you can listen to Women of the Military podcast on Wreaths Across America Radio on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. And you can listen on iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, or Odyssey. Now with that out of the way, let's get started with this week's interview. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Women in the Military podcast. I'm excited to have Jamie here to talk about her experience in the military and about moral injury. So thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
So let's start with, why did you decide to join the military?
Oh, this is a funny story and I'll keep it short, but I didn't have any plans to join the military. On the day that I met my recruiter, I was actually just rollerblading through a YMCA parking lot and almost got hit by a car. And in the car was an Army recruiter. And I stopped to let him know that I was okay. And he was a great recruiter. He immediately jumped into, "What are you doing with your life?" And I said, "Well, right now I'm rollerblading." And he's like, "Well, what are you doing tomorrow? You should come talk to me." And I did, because I was just an honest kid and I didn't really have anything better to do. So the next day I went and met my recruiter and he laid out all the benefits. I had gone to college for a year, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so this just felt like a way to buy myself some time, get some money for college, have the medical and dental benefits. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And of course, everybody was super friendly and helpful when they were recruiting me, right? And so the next day I went to the military and processing center and took all my tests. I did really well. Everybody there was super friendly. And then a couple of months later, I was on a bus to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, where all of a sudden they weren't that friendly and they didn't care if I had a great, you know, score or that I went to college. They kind of leveled the playing field. And it was initially a culture shock, but I apparently got over it and decided to stick it out for 23 more years. So that's the true story.
I like how it went from like, I had no intention of joining the military, to a 20 plus year career. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, time flies.
So what was your initial job when you joined the military?
Human resource specialist. Back then, the code was 71 LEMA, so some of my old school friends will know what I'm talking about there. And it eventually changed to a 42 Alpha or 42 Hotel as I got promoted to officer. The easy way to say it is we did all the paperwork that nobody wants to do for personnel actions, awards, evaluations, but there's really so much more to taking care of people and kind of serving as the pulse for the command on how things are going with the people, because they're coming to us with their issues. They're letting us know how things are really going. And then just being that conduit, you know, in a professional way, let the commander know, like, this, you know, this upcoming deployment is putting a lot of stress on families. It's hard for them to get in here to do the paperwork that they need to do. So that can affect pay and and other things, which, you know, when you're getting ready to leave your family for a year, that's the last thing you want to be worried about. So we would just try to keep an eye on the climate and how people were feeling and make sure that we were taking every care of everyone really well. So that's part of what I did.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way and a really smart way to look at personnel, because like so often you think of like admin paperwork and like the awards and it all is so important, but there's also, you know, like real problems that are coming up, and I'm sure that you guys saw patterns and different things, and that's something that the commander can really rely on to get a pulse with, because that sort of like low level issues aren't going to come up to the commander unless, you know, it's something that lots of people are dealing with and really is having an impact. And so that's really cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it was a very fulfilling career field in the military because I got to be the support to the soldiers.
So you said basic training was a shock, but then you ended up, you know, staying in. So how quickly did you like adapt to Army life?
It took me a minute, I won't lie. It took me about a year. Prior to joining the military, I think I was a really outgoing, happy person, but I had a very small worldview. I grew up in a small town in Michigan. Everybody looked the same, you know what I mean? And so joining the military, I was meeting people from all over the country, all different demographics, you know, learning different cultures. I mean, if you think about it, every family in and of itself is its own culture, but then add to it, you know, the diversity and in different parts of the country and everything. So it was extremely interesting, and also just trying to learn how to navigate different personalities and different, you know, experiences and backgrounds. So I would say it took me about a year before I really started to feel more comfortable. I just wasn't used to the directness, if that makes sense. I not very often outside of situations like the military are people very, you know, bottom line up front, tell me what you need, tell me, you know, what's your recommendation, and then go, because we don't have time for a conversation. And I was used to telling the whole story and how I came to this, and, you know, they didn't want to hear that. And when you're in combat, you don't have time for that. And I just couldn't appreciate that at first. So I thought people were mad at me. I thought I was, you know, I was doing things wrong. And so once I figured out that that's just how they do business, you know, because I didn't have a mentor telling me these things, I just had to figure it all out on my own. Once I figured that out and I started becoming more direct myself and kind of cracking jokes and things like that, you know, sarcasm is very prevalent in the military, and just learning to use that to my advantage, people started really responding to that. And I'm like, okay, I think I can do this.
Yeah, I think it's funny when like a group of veterans get together. I've done like some collaboration meetings, and sometimes we forget that like we don't know each other, that we should introduce. We just are like, we're here to get this done. And so it's funny because we'll be like, dive in, and then we'll be like, oh, we don't actually know each other. Maybe we should do introductions, which I think on the civilian side, they'd be like, why would you skip that? And it's funny. So like, I have to like have a checklist. Make sure you introduce yourself.
Ask people how they're doing. How's your family? Right. Those kinds of things. Yeah.
It's really funny. But yeah, I've been in a few meetings where it's like all veterans and we just are like, let's get this done. And it's like, oh yeah.
He's gonna do what? Let's go. Yeah.
I did ROTC, so it was like a slow like transition. So by the time I was in the military, I was like accustomed to how the military was worked, but I could see like enlisting, you'd be like, wait, what is going on? This is nothing like.
Yeah. Yep. And when I got to go through, so I ended up getting a ROTC scholarship after about 3 years of being enlisted. And that was interesting because now I'm going back to college and I've got 3 years of military experience under my belt, and some of the freshmen coming into the ROTC program were just like I was when I stepped foot into basic training. And, you know, their uniforms are all messed up and they're packing what they brought in their packing, you know, for the field was all messed up. And I was just like, so judgmental.
Get your stuff together.
How do you
right?
not know this? How can you not know this? But I quickly figured it out. I was like, oh yeah, I remember a time I didn't know this either. So I got over it pretty quick.
Yeah, well, it becomes like second nature, and then you forget that you had to learn it at one point, especially if you like had to learn it basic and you had to learn it really fast because it was like, you know, put on you and you didn't have time to really think about it. So then it's like, oh, I've always known this, but it's like, no, you just learned it really fast and then you did it a million times. And so now it's part of who you are. So it sounds like you went from enlisted to officer pretty quickly. So what was the process of getting into, was it like green to gold, or how, what was the program that you got to use so you were able to do that?
It was the green to gold program, which is just a program for those, you know, enlisted members who have a desire and the aptitude to serve as an officer. So there was a whole application process that I had to do and, you know, get re-enrolled in college. I, like I said, I had done some college, but didn't know what I wanted to do. So once that was approved, I was actually deployed at the time to Hungary. This was 1999, and it was a short deployment, short compared to what they became, right? It was a 6-month deployment and around 4.5 months. And I found out that I had gotten accepted. And so my, because we had, extra people in my section, my commander released me early to go back and out process my unit and get started in college a couple months later. So that was a very exciting time, but also, you know, like, oh my gosh, I've been in the Army for 3 years and now I'm going back to normal life. And so there was another adjustment period for sure.
So what was ROTC like? Also, if you did more than like 2 or 3 years, then you would have crossed over into September 11th, right?
Yeah. So yeah, ROTC was great. You know, I learned basic infantry tactics, and not necessarily because I was going to become an infantry officer, but because that's the way, as you know, that they evaluate your decision-making and leadership skills. We learn a lot of the tactics. And then from our the summer between our junior and senior year, we go and demonstrate those tactics in a practice environment together with students, ROTC students from all over the country. And it's not real, but it's realistic in terms of, you know, when you go to a unit, you're not going to know anybody, but you're going to be expected to lead, and you're going to be expected to be able to handle challenging situations as a leader. And so, you know, it may not be the best way to evaluate those things, but I thought it was a pretty good way. And you also learn to appreciate the types of decisions that the people, like I supported the infantry, right? But having a idea of what it was like to serve in some of those scenarios, even if they were practice or, you know, it just helped me. And then later in life, I got to serve as the professor of military science for an Army ROTC program. So it was, you know, I was recalling so much of what I had learned, you know, 17 years before. And I was like, oh, I still remember this. I still know what I'm talking about. And that was exciting. So I was glad I went through that experience. But yeah, my September of 2001, I was a senior in college. And, you know, that following May, I was going to be commissioning. And up until that point, we hadn't experienced anything quite like that before. And so it was, I wouldn't say it was a shock because I had been deployed before, but I had no idea the scale, and I had no idea what was going to be expected of me. And so, like, I wasn't worried, but I was hyper-focused, like, got to get through the school year, got to go get trained, and then no idea what's next. But I'm here. I'm willing to do it. So
yeah, I feel like none of us knew what was coming, or I mean, how long the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah,
I mean, it's crazy to think that it went like 20 years, and it's just crazy because I think I was a senior in high school and I had no connection to the military, but I thought it was gonna be like a short thing that was over before, you know, I even graduated, and it was still going on, you know, long after I even left the military.
Because that was our experience with the first Desert Storm. I was in high school at that time. I think I was a freshman actually, and I just remember it kind of being this very minor thing off in the background. Like, I remember when they announced that we were going to Iraq, and no comprehension. Like, I didn't have anybody in my family that went. So I had the luxury of just being able to focus on high school. But yeah, before you knew it, it was over. So, you know, based on our experience in our lifetime, things like that didn't last 20 years. You know, Vietnam did, but that was a long time ago, right, to us. But what's interesting, you know, these were the 20 years that I started my family. I raised my kids. I served in the military. I mean, all the things that, you know, stereotypically you do from your 20s to your 40s, I did during those 20 years at war. And that has part to do with what I'm going to be talking later about with the moral injury and just the burnout and things that happened during that time for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from your career, were there any things that like stood out that you think we should talk about before we talk about moral injury?
Well, yeah, I definitely want to do some significant highlights because there was so much goodness that came out of this. In fact, I was talking to somebody earlier and they said, you know, how do you think your experience in the military has helped you? And I'm like, oh my gosh, where do I begin? Really? I mean, I am not the same person that I was when I joined. I was young and naive. And, you know, like I said, I had this much of a worldview. And the confidence that I was able to gain by being put into leadership situations or highly stressful situations in which you had to figure it out or, you know, lives were on the line. That and just the way that all of that puts things into perspective, you know, like you have a business challenge come up, you're like, well, at least I'm not getting shot at. I can handle this, you know, where other people might think this is the end of the world and this is the worst thing that could possibly happen. I'm like, I've seen worse. The number of experiences that I have interacting with and leading people and helping them work through, you know, their professional and their personal challenges. I mean, just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of opportunities. And I think that's really what prepared me more than like any other curriculum or education, formal education. It was just those experiences of helping people that equipped me for the work that I do now as a life coach and an executive coach. But also it forced me to go through so many experiences that I otherwise would have run away from or not been presented with. And yet I was able to get through it. And now I really feel there is just about nothing. You know, I don't think there's anything that I can't work through with help, of course. And that's another thing you learn in the military is not any one of us fought the enemy on our own. It was the collective coming together and brainstorming ideas and deciding on different courses of action and then committing to it, not leaving anyone behind and all those kinds of things. Like that's where you really learn like anything's possible if you get the right people around you and, you know, and decide you're not going to quit. I learned a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I really liked what you said, like, where challenges came up and like either they wouldn't have been presented or you would have ran away from them. Because I think a lot of times I've been talking to my kids about like bravery because people have told me like, you're so brave. You went to Afghanistan. I was like, yeah, I didn't have a choice. Like, and so we've talked about like how bravery doesn't mean you're not scared or that you don't want to do something. Because I guess, I mean, I was brave. I did go, but sometimes even like the definitions that the school provides are like they were brave and like they had no fear, and it's like no, they had fear. And so try and like change that narrative. And so I think talking about like how the military pushes you to do things, even like things that may not be big things to some people, can be really big things that you have to overcome. I remember when I went through field training, we had to go up over this like sideways ladder, and I got like, there were like three of us that got stuck at the top, and like I could not like go over, and like then everybody came up and they like cheered us on, and eventually I did it and I made it to the ground. And for 20 of us, it was like no big deal, but for three of us, it was such a big deal. It changed my like confidence of something that I really, when I got to the top, there was no way I was going to get over it, but I did. And it just taught me that I can do things that I think are impossible. And I think the military does that so often.
Yep. It's really good at, presenting you with opportunities to grow that you would not have picked otherwise.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, that was a training one. There's a lot more examples I have, but I really like that one because it just kind of puts in perspective of like something that, something that you don't even really realize is going to be a big deal. Because when I climbed up it, I was like climbing, and then I got to the top and I was like, I have to go over. I did do it and it was fine, but it was really scary. And there's so many times in the military where I've had to do things that were really scary and it didn't matter. Because I had to do it. I had to get, and you also talked about like figuring out how to do things. Like you have to get the mission done. And that may mean that you have to like relook at the situation. I think that's why like entrepreneurship is so great for veterans, because we learn how to like take, COAs, three courses of actions. And then if plan one doesn't work, how are we going to do plan two? And what are we going to change? And that's just, that's military life.
Absolutely. Yep.
Another thing you mentioned was that you started your family while serving in the military. So did you face any challenges of being a mom and being a soldier? And what was that like?
Oh, yes, definitely. So what I've come to appreciate is this is something that's hard to appreciate unless you've done it and been a mom in the military. And so I don't get too frustrated if people can't appreciate it, but when I would talk to my girlfriends who were in the military, sometimes, it's easy to get a little salty about this because we don't talk about it. We don't talk about all the things that we have to do to get our kids ready to drop them off at daycare before 6 o'clock so that we can be on time for that first formation. And you know that so many of those people have basically rolled out of bed 5 minutes before and are standing there half asleep, but you've probably been up for 2 hours and you had to deal with crying kids and you probably forgot something and you had to go back home and get it because it was the bottles or the diaper bag or your hat that you forgot, And so, when I coach women in the military, I think that's one of the things they appreciate about me is I'm like, I know you do more before 6 o'clock than most people do all day, not to mention everything else you're going to do all day and then pick up the kids, go home, feed them, bathe them, get them to bed. They're going to resist, everybody needs sleep. So yeah, but there again, like that has just made me, I call it a logistics ninja. Like I can figure out any sort of complex scenario and how to get everyone where they need to be in the right clothes at the right time, with the right food, blah, 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 and still perform at a high level myself. And I owe that to the challenges of being a woman and a mother in the military. I can also, I think, on some level appreciate what it's like to be a single parent. My husband and I were geographically separated for almost 7 years in, between schools and deployments and just not being able to get assignments in the same place at the same time. And so either I was missing my kids because they were with dad, or more often I was raising them by myself and trying to play mom and dad and still get all the things done that needed to get done for work. And so those challenges, they were really, really hard. But again, it's like going to the gym and lifting hard weights, right? You just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And that's another reason why as an entrepreneur, I'm like, okay, this one thing went wrong, but I can get these other 10 things done and you won't even know that it happened.
Yeah, I've read a few books by military moms. Patricia Qualam wrote Moms in the Military, that was interviews with moms who served. And it was just really interesting to see like all the different challenges. And then, now I'm blanking on her name, but I know the book's name, Working Moms, How We Do It, is written by a woman veteran. And she talked about like all the things that she had to do. And she was talking about the same thing, like how she had to get her kids ready and get dropped off and all the different challenges that she faced. And then she wrote that book as a resource because people were like, how do you do it? And she was like, well, I'm going to write a book so that other people can use it as like a guide to help them in their own lives.
I had, if I had a dime for every time somebody said, I don't know how you do it, I'd be rich. And I would be like, it's not always gracefully, but it's kind of like deploying. You just got to figure it out. You just got to do it.
Yeah. So it sounds like you faced a lot of challenges, dual military, a mom, deployment, separation, like so many challenges in the military. I'm like, how did you do it? I'm not supposed to say that. How did you get through all those situations?
You know, I think the challenges of raising a family in the military, that in and of itself was so much, right? I think the other piece of this is just being a woman in the military and those challenges. And again, it's hard to appreciate what that's like if you aren't a woman and, you know, in the military. And you and I had kind of talked about this before, like people just can't, they don't know what they don't know. They can only really base their thinking off of their own experiences unless they see it for themselves or have somebody explain it to them in a way that they can comprehend. But even then, it's intellectual. It's not the way that it actually feels. So, you know, some of the challenges that were presented were actual, like people doing things to me or towards me or around me that affected me. But then there's just the stuff that you pick up from society and family and, you know, these beliefs that you have about your own worth in these types of environments. And, you know, just, you know, putting on myself at the time, I couldn't have even been in the infantry if I wanted to be. So there's the limitation is like, I couldn't do it. I wasn't allowed to. But then add on top of that is like, these are the real heroes. These are the guys that are going in and like doing the really hard stuff. And, you know, I'm not doing those things. And do I even deserve to wear the uniform, you know, and to put it on every day anyway, and go in and do my administrative role anyway, you know, I'm doing good work. And I'm beating myself up at the same time for not being worthy, you know, and that's just me being honest, but I don't think I'm alone in that. I've talked to many people who are like, yeah, I'd see these guys going, they'd be leaving the base to go out and, you know, engage with the enemy. And I would be back cooking food or filing paperwork or filling gas cans, you know, and then they come back and you see them and they're tired, they're worn out, or, you know, worst case, something really catastrophic has happened and you kind of just had a normal day, you know? So those challenges are there as well. That's stuff that unless you're in the military, you don't see that stuff. So it doesn't affect you. And then the judgment that comes with, you know, I wish I could do more, but I can't. That's hard. But then, you know, like I said, just bringing some of that stuff in from my childhood, other people bring in their beliefs about women and what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing. And, you know, sometimes that stuff gets projected on you as a woman. And, you know, you can either say, oh, you're dumb, you don't know what you're talking about, or you take it to heart. But it's usually somewhere in between that, you know, like maybe they're right. You know, maybe I shouldn't be here. The year that I had to leave, you know, when I say I had to, let me just say, like, I volunteered to be in the military. Okay. It was a choice I made. So I realized that. And all of my teammates were deploying and doing these things. And I just felt guilt. I felt guilt and shame that I wasn't doing those things. And I felt guilt and shame that I would, you know, even consider leaving my kids. And when I finally did get the opportunity to deploy, and I was gone for an entire year. I mean, I missed my oldest daughter's entire first grade year of school. I never even met her teacher. You know, on the one hand, I'm like, I'm sharing the load with my friends so they don't have to leave their families one more time. You know, it's my turn. And on the other hand, I'm like, you know, what kind of mom leaves their kid for a year? And I did it. So, you know, and you hold both of those things at the same time. And you're judging yourself either way. And so again, you know, like I've worked through a lot of this and I've, you know, I have a therapist and all that kind of stuff, but you don't have time when you're in it to stop and think you know, Jamie, don't put all this guilt and shame on yourself. Just do your job. So I did my job and I carried the guilt and shame at the same time, which is exhausting. It's really exhausting, you know? So like I said, all the things that we actually have to do, and then all the things we put on ourselves to worry about or feel bad about. And yeah, it's challenging. It's really challenging.
Well, and I think the guilt thing is hard. Like, no matter what you do, it's so easy to compare your story with someone else's and think like, oh, well, I didn't do enough, because I was on those convoys because I deployed with the Army Infantry Unit. It was lots of fun. But like, even there, I felt like, you know, I had this like struggle of like, am I doing enough? And it's like, you have to come to a point like, there's never like enough. What you're doing is important. And like, I was so grateful for the people on base who were doing my paperwork, you know, so that I could get paid, so I could get awards, so I could get everything that needed to be done. And the people who like filled our gas, you know, put gas in our trucks, and like all the support personnel that we needed so that we could go on the missions, like they were heroes in my book because we couldn't do our mission without them. And so I think sometimes we think like, oh, I'm not doing enough, but the military can't function unless you have all those pieces, and not everybody can be out on the battlefield.
And not everybody wants to do paperwork. I think most people don't want to do paperwork. So
yeah, we're happy to hand it off to you.
You do this so I can do that. Okay, I got you.
I mean, our S1 was so important to our team. Like, he did so much. And he did get to go on one of the missions because he was like, I just want to get off the base and do something fun. And he was there, like, doing helping PA take photos. But he did so much work for our team. And he was an invaluable member. If we didn't have him, I don't know what would have happened, because we would not have got anything done. And so I think it's just so easy to like, especially as women, to discount the work that we do and think that we're not doing enough.
Oh, for sure. That plagues most of us most of the time.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what we're doing. So let's talk a little bit more about moral injury and how that became something that you wanted to talk about and how it's played a role in your life.
Yeah. So there are lots of different definitions out there on moral injury, and you can Google them. What I like to say, at least for me, is it's a form of trauma, but it's not really recognized yet. Like in the organization that I work with, Moral Injury Support Network for Servicewomen, we are actually doing research to compile the information that will be required to hopefully get that changed. But, you know, I'm sure you're aware there are big, big traumas, like, you know, really catastrophic, life-altering in that moment traumas. And then there are things that are more subtle, but they accumulate over time, and it really can affect your self-esteem, your self-efficacy. And let's just take a scenario. You know, lots of veterans or military people, they know that if they go to combat, bad things can happen. They know that the enemy is going to try to kill them, and they're going to have to try to kill or successfully kill the enemy. And most people, through their training and just their understanding of, you know, this is unfortunately how the world works in some cases, expect that those things will happen. But what often ends up happening in the aftermath of that is situations that they, you know, where maybe something tries to get covered up because the decision that was made in the moment wasn't the best decision. It wasn't the textbook decision, but it was a decision and you can't take it back, right? But then maybe somebody else gets blamed for a decision that a leader made. And it gets pushed, you know, how they say stuff rolls downhill. And so now you've got the person at the lowest level who just did what they were told getting in trouble for the decision that was made. And then that person's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So the compromise of values and the loss of trust and, you know, feeling like you're on another planet. You're like, am I the only person that thinks this is wrong? And being told that you're wrong for feeling that way, that affects your spirit, your soul. And that's what we call a moral injury. I use this example all the time because it's frustrating, but it's not re-traumatizing, I don't think. But like for a physical fitness test, you know that soldiers and airmen and, you know, get kicked out if they can't meet the minimum requirements for their physical fitness and their height weight, right? And so you see them getting kicked out. Well, then you witness or you hear that a commander or a leader did the same thing. They lied on their physical fitness test, or they lied about their weight so that they didn't have to, you know, get flagged and face potentially administrative repercussions for that. And you're like, I thought we were all about integrity. I thought we were about, you know, honesty, and you're the person that's going to lead me into combat. And you can't even be honest about something this easy, this simple. How do I know you're going to have my back when the bullets are flying? And so it's like kind of like death by a thousand cuts, right? It's just these tiny little slights, but sometimes they're huge. But it just really begins to weigh you down. And then one day you wake up and you're like, why am I doing this? If this is what we're really about, am I a bad person for continuing to show up when I know these things are happening and nobody's doing anything about it? And I don't want to by any means paint the picture that the military is totally this way, but it's made up of humans, and humans make mistakes, and humans do bad things when they're in stressful situations or they haven't had enough sleep or whatever, right? The other piece of this is we all have our perspective. And so I see a situation happen. I think I know what's going on, but I don't have all the facts. And then I internalize it as this morally injurious thing, when if I had the whole picture, I would have been like, oh, okay, I understand now. But because I think it is what it is, and I think nobody's doing anything about it, then I self-isolate, then I start to feel the guilt and the shame of not saying anything. And then there's, I did say something and I got blown off, or I got told to mind my own business, or those kinds of things. So we all encounter moral injury at some point in our life, whether it's our parents letting us down, you know, they do as I say, not as I do kind of a thing. Well, I thought, nope, don't worry about what I'm doing. You just do it the right way. Teachers, coaches, you know, bosses. But when it's a high stakes situation like we face in the military, it's like, it just feels like it's 1,000 times worse, because in normal society, we don't expect everybody to live up to the same values as we have. But when you're in the military and they lay out the values and they tell you to memorize them and live up to them, it's that much more devastating or hurtful or morally injurious when it happens. So,
yeah, I was thinking a lot about like my deployment. There was we didn't have a very good commander and he got fired, and there was a lot of like backstabbing, and like, so a lot of the trauma from my deployment was based on like how I was treated by the same people who I'm supposed to go outside of the base with, who are supposed to protect me. But then, you know, inside the base, they are, you know, saying mean things about me, spreading rumors and stabbing me in the back. And like that inner conflict was like really challenging and something that I've had to work, you know, with my mental health, because, and then I also was thinking like military sexual trauma, it's something that a lot of women in the military face. And so like, and all the things you mentioned, like having it happen and not saying anything, or seeing something and not saying anything, or saying something and getting blown off. And so like all those things are like wrapped up into that one topic in the military for sure. And so,
yeah, there were times early in my career that I was afraid to say something, or I was told, you know, say something, you're going to regret it. And then later in my career, when I got more rank and more confidence, I would say something and then I didn't do it right. Or, you know, oh, you're overreacting. And when I get told I'm overreacting, that makes me want to overreact. You know, I'm like, no. This person got harassed. This is wrong. I'm telling you so that you can do something about it. Don't tell me I'm overreacting, because I just sat in the training yesterday that said, if you see something, say something. And I'm saying something. And now you're telling me to go away. What's up with that? You know? So yeah, you can tell it's still, it's just one of those things. You, when you really believe in what you're doing and want to do what's right, and you think that's what you're doing, and you think everyone around you feels the same way, when you're faced with the reality that, you know, as good as we want to be, we're still human and we're still gonna let each other down. I just think, you know, going back to how naive I was before, I think I really set myself up. Like, I'm like, oh, they're all superheroes and they're always going to do the right thing. And it's like, nope, they're humans and they're going to make mistakes and they're going to let you down. And I just think if I would have known that, and that's part of what we do with the moral injury training, is not to excuse the behavior, but just to say, like, people are going to let you down. And the sooner you realize that, this, you'll won't put them on a pedestal. You'll take them at face value and you'll roll with the punches and deal with it, but you won't, it won't rock you to the core, which is what it did to me, you know, especially early on. And then some significant events later, I was just like, and I think, you know, I don't blame the military for this. I don't hate the military for this, but I do think it's what led to the burnout and kind of the depression and the things that set in towards the end of my career, which was why I ultimately decided to retire. Because again, I didn't have time to stop and think about, why do I feel like crap right now? Why do I not want to get out of bed anymore? And it had a lot to do with the different things that were going on in my life at the time, dealing with my own harassment of some of my cadets, you know, different things that were going on that I was aware of that I couldn't affect. I couldn't change it. And I was just like, I gotta step away, you know? And I think if I would have understood what was going on and also understood that my mental health is paramount to me being able to effectively navigate this, I have to stop. I have to go to therapy. I have to take care of myself, or I'm going to do what I did and allowed myself to get burnt out.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful. And the military is really good at like pushing you forward. And because that's like, we're mission focused. And so that's like by nature and culture of the way that we are. And I think the military is working to like prioritize mental health, but it's really hard to change, you know, a culture, especially when there's a mission that still needs to be done. And that's like the priority. And so I think that there are changes being made and that they're slowly starting to take root, but it's still something that, I mean, even veterans who aren't in the military still have stigmas to overcome and, you know, a hard time slowing down to, you know, focus on themselves. I know I have trouble taking care of myself.
Absolutely. Yep.
But I have gone through therapy and I've found it super valuable, and I highly recommend that people, you know, get help and take time to talk to someone and like look back at different situations and see how they affect you, especially like really traumatizing things that you didn't have time to process because you're either in a war zone or in a high stress environment. It's just so important and so life-giving to go back and take the time.
I'll share one more big chunk. When I retired, you know, dealing with that burnout, and I retired at the end of 2019. Well, what happened 3 or 4 months later, right? COVID. And so we were all just trying to frantically adjust and homeschool our kids and figure out what the new normal was going to be. I didn't take any time to file a disability claim, address my mental health issues. I mean, there weren't even counselors that you could get a hold of at the time. It was what it was, right? But about 15 months after I retired, I had a friend / mentor who had retired before me contact me and ask me, have you filed a disability claim yet? And I was like, no, sir. He outranked me when we were in, and he's like, why not? And this is where that feeling of worthiness, I'm like, sir, there's people that have been blown up, that have lost limbs, lost their lives, you know, lost their buddies. Like, I basically made it through without any catastrophic anything. Like, let somebody else get those benefits. Let somebody else get that money. And he's like, Jamie, that's not how it works. There's not a tiny pot of money and we all get one quarter of it, you know, one coin. Like, these are entitlements, and if you qualify, they're for you to get the extra help that you need. He's like, are you telling me that you weren't you didn't have any physical side effects of being in the military. I was like, no, I didn't say that. I mean, I had to get massages all the time. I had to get chiropractic adjustments all the time. I probably ran 50,000 miles. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but just all that running on my body after having three kids and having, you know, bouncing back into shape, like I put my body under a ton of stress. I've got stuff in my neck, stuff in my back, stuff in my knees, stuff in my feet. And he's like, exactly. You're not the same person that you were when you came in the military. So go get yourself checked out. And I was like, yes, sir. And honestly, biggest reason why I did that was because I knew that at some point I was going to be talking to my friends about this. At some point I was going to be coaching, you know, a veteran on this stuff. And I would never tell anyone, you don't deserve to, you know, to be checked out. You don't deserve these benefits. I would be like, what are you doing? Go get checked out. Get, you know, get what you're entitled to. Cause yeah, you can use it for your massage or your chiropractor or whatever. So I decided I was going to do it so that I could tell people I did it and that I would have integrity, because that was very important to me. Another thing I thought about is, you know, even if you don't feel like you deserve any disability income, think about what your kids sacrificed and all the things that they couldn't do or had to miss out on that other kids got to do because mom's gone for a year, dad's gone for a year, they're not with their parents. And thinking about, okay, even if I made 50 extra bucks, I could take my kids out to eat. If I got 100 extra bucks, I could take them on a, you know, a park, go to a theme park or something. I was like, they definitely deserve it. They didn't sign up for the military, but they definitely were affected by it. So, you know, trying to make that process about other people really helped me. And I'm sharing that because that's all you can muster is, I'm going to do this so I can help other people go through this process, or I'm going to do this because my kids might benefit from it. Then tell yourself whatever you need to tell yourself, but definitely go get checked out. And then the other piece of this is, even if you get 100% this physical disability, I would definitely encourage people to still go ahead and do the mental health disability claim, because I didn't realize until I went through that process how much I had stuffed way deep down inside of me. And what often happens when we do that is we do things to keep it down. Things like drinking too much, eating too much, you know, having like really distracting activities like 24 hours straight of video games, or, you know, going to the casino or whatever. Like, none of these things in and of themselves are bad things, but when we're using those things to push down feelings that we don't want to feel, like that, the only person that's going to hurt is you and probably the people that matter most to you. And so by going through that mental health disability process, I realized I still have things that I haven't worked through, things I wasn't even, I just wanted to throw it all in the closet with my gear and just move on with my life. But it was affecting my life. It was affecting my relationships. It was affecting my health and how I was treating myself. And I did end up getting the help that I needed. And that's part of the reason I learned about moral injury and part of the reason that I'm involved in this organization now. So, and that's the probably the last thing I would want to share with you on this, especially as it pertains to veterans in general, but women veterans, is, you know, all these things that we've gone through, the good and the bad, we can use those to help make it better for other people. You know, I say, and I, this is a common thing, you can either get bitter or you can get better. You can either get bitter or you can help make things better for other people. And I'm just a strong believer in, you know, all of those things, as hard as they were, they helped equip me and prepare me for the work that I'm doing now. And I'm really proud of the work that I'm doing. I've already seen the Moral Injury Support Network for service women be part of the healing process, if not the healing process, for my sisters in arms. And I'm just so proud of the ability to be a part of it. And it makes all the really hard times worth it.
I loved hearing that. That reminded me, when I started my podcast, I had recently went through the 12-step recovery program, and then the last step, you're like supposed to do something to give back to your community. And so that's why I started a podcast.
Oh, wow. That's really good. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And now 6 years later, to see like how that kind of little idea turned into, you know, over 200 episodes, I guess. Wow. Over 270 episodes. And just, I've learned so much and it's changed my life. And yeah, so it's kind of really cool to hear like how at the end of it, you can like find a passion or a purpose and how it can really change your life. So
yeah, for sure. That's incredible. That's really great. Thanks for sharing that.
So can you give us the website to your organization so that people can find it? And then I'll add it to the show notes as well.
Yes. So one of the things I really like about our organization, the Moral Injury Support Network for Service Women, is the acronym is MISNS, which if you look at it, looks like missions. So that's what we refer to it as missions, the Moral Injury Support Network for Service Women. So the actual website is, I'll do the phonetic alphabet that all the veterans will understand. So it's Mike India Sierra, November Sierra.org, missions.org. And that's where you can learn about, you know, the research that we're doing. We also do a podcast. We've got different training programs, and we do, you know, special one-off events. If an organization wants to come in and learn more about moral injury, we really focus on the social workers, the psychologists, the chaplains, those people that will be interacting with service women to be the support network for them. It's just learning about and understanding moral injury is just one more tool in their toolkit to be able to really provide that best level of care. Because if you don't know what moral injury is and you don't know what the effects are, you might say, oh, they're just depressed or they're just anxious, let me give them this medication. But when you really uncover why, and actually it's so validating to figure out, I'm depressed because that was wrong and that shouldn't have happened. And actually it's a healthy response to some messed up stuff, and I'm normal and I'm okay. I'm not crazy, you know? And that's been one of the most liberating things for me, is I wasn't burnt out. The burnout wasn't because I couldn't handle being in the military and I couldn't handle being a wife and a mother and a leader at the same time. It was the emotional and mental and, you know, spiritual effects of seeing all this stuff happen and feeling totally helpless to change it. That is depressing. And it's okay to feel that way. So that's we love to go out and do these trainings. Another thing that we really want to pitch heavily is we do a missions host a comprehensive moral injury conference once a year. We're doing it this year in September, September 16th through the 19th. We're actually doing it at a retreat center just outside of Atlanta, Georgia, because we want the people, the social workers, the psychologists, the nurse practitioners, anyone who's in these spaces is already overwhelmed and probably facing some level of burnout themselves. So we're inviting them, come learn about moral injury, but let's do it in a way that's also relaxing and has some social aspects to it so that they can leave feeling not just educated, but also a little bit refreshed. And then they've met people who are also operating in these spaces, wanting to provide the best support that they can, not just to service women, but to their own populations. Like medical professionals have moral injury, teachers have moral injury, nurses, police, fire, you know, anybody. But we are very proud that we're bringing all those people together in one space to learn best practices and stay on the cutting edge of this research.
That's so awesome. Okay, and we're almost out of time, but you need to answer my last question, which is, what advice would you give to young women who are considering joining the military?
This is a loaded one. And what I would say is definitely reach out for mentorship to a woman in the military that is successful. The really good ones are going to tell you the truth, which is that it's not easy. But I don't think anything that's worth it in life to, you know, accomplish is easy to accomplish. But if you go in with your eyes wide open and you know what to look for and things to pay attention to, you're going to do great and you're going to be fine. I think a lot of people come in and they don't know what to expect and they make decisions based on, you know, whatever feels right in the moment, and they can find themselves in situations that they didn't want to be in. And that happens in college, that happens in life, that happens in the workplace, right? So having that strong female mentor that you can reach out to, that you know's got your back, and also male mentors, but, you know, for women specifically, it's helpful to have the advice of a woman who's been successful in that space.
I think that's great advice. I have a Women of the Military mentorship program that you can find in the show notes, because I think mentorship is so important and sometimes it's hard to find a mentor. So I'm working to help you get connected. Thank you so much for being a guest. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I'm really glad we got to do this interview.
Yeah. Thanks again, Amanda. I really appreciate it. And if I can ever participate in the mentorship group, I would love that. That'd be fun.
I'll send you the info.
All right. Take care. Thank you.